You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You feel this nervousness on the phone there?
Sir, I've been trying to make an urgent phone call up there.
I don't think it's something I want to do on an overseas phone.
You gotta make some phone calls. Hang up the phone. Prank caller.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to Packernet After Dark. This is the call-in show of the Packernet Podcast Network. If you'd like to call in, if you'd like to participate in the show, please feel free to do so. The phone number here is 608-501-0718. New callers go directly to the front of the line. We don't have any of those, so let's start with Ryan.
Hey, Ryan. It's Brian from Illinois. Just a quick question on the new kickoff rule. If it is pretty close to the XFL's rules, wouldn't you take your best blocking, what would it be? Just your offensive line for the most part. Line those guys up because they're not going to have to drop back to create a wedge anymore.
Yep.
You would just have them immediately engage the opponent that's, 5 yards in front of them. Just lock up your guy. That way, someone like Keyshawn could just find one gap, one seam, and at that point, wouldn't it just be a foot race? Because if you have one guy for each person, if they are the best blockers on the team, they should be able to lock up one guy in front of them. I was just thinking that would be the easiest way. You have every lineman just pancake the person in front of you, or at the very least, just keep their hands full. And they're not doing a lot of running because at that point you're just going 5 yards, 10 yards. And I mean, at that point, if Keyshawn can just outrun everybody, wouldn't that be a thing? I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something. Have a good one. Bye.
So we're going to talk about that somewhat in depth on tomorrow's podcast, the whole kickoff rule thing and some of the changes and implications. That was something I even had questioned, because when I saw a video of how it was done and I saw that really they really only had guys drop about 5 yards and then turn around and block, and I'm thinking, man, offensive linemen can do that. They can drop 5 yards, turn and block. I don't think that's going to happen. It sounds like they are going to get bigger, but not quite that big, because there's going to be less space but still some space. And if you ever seen an offensive lineman try to work in space, it doesn't take much space for a linebacker to be able to make him look stupid and get right past him. And I'm thinking that's going to be the issue. So the only real negative that I kind of thought of as I was talking about the podcast tomorrow is you mentioned Keyshawn Nixon. You know, everything is changing. And if you watch it, and this is one of the things we even talk about, one of the architects of this thing mentioned that it really functions more like a run play as opposed to sort of like a catch in space. I don't know. I hope he's still the guy. I don't know that Keyshawn Nixon is still going to be the same dude. In fact, I don't know that he doesn't lose the job outright. Because again, this is very different. The types of guys you're going to look for kickoff returns change from wide receivers who do a great job in space, you know, really fast guys that can make things work in space, to more like one cut and go running backs. And maybe that's still Keyshawn, But that was my, you know, I was all excited about it. And then the more they're explaining it and how everything's going to change, the type of guys that you want for special teams kind of across the board are going to change. You know, you're not looking for gunners really anymore. Those guys that can sprint down the field and get there, that's not the point. So trying to get down the field is going to be bigger too. You're looking for, you know, somewhat, they said, I think, smaller linebackers and bigger safeties, sort of probably that 225-pound range, guys that are, you know, able to kind of push past. They've still got some speed, but also can kind of take on blocks and shed blocks and that kind of stuff. And then on the other side of it, you're looking at like big blocking tight end types. So it changes everything across the board, and I'm pretty excited about it. But I mean, it literally changes everything. I mean, even down to Rich Bisaccia, he may have been the right guy for what we had. Is he the right guy moving forward? Because we're all starting at zero. His experience means very little in terms of experience for what. We're throwing all that out. We need innovators now, and maybe that's Rich. I don't know, but it's going to be a race to figure out how to do it. We do have a little bit of a template with what the XFL built and being able to watch what they did. But there's not much. And they the guy that we'll talk about that did a little Twitter thread, he kind of speculated that, you know, it might not even be until midway through the season that we start to see the beneficial results is as far as like a big explosive plays, return touchdowns, which he's saying there's probably going to be a massive explosion of those types of plays, but it's going to take a while because you got to figure out scheme and everything else. I mean, he was even talking about how you might see a split between whether you're running a man or a zone scheme, because again, this is basically like a run play. So then, and then depending on whether you run man or zone will determine what kinds of special teamers you want on your return team. I mean, it's a whole crazy thing. I'm excited because I think it's going to kind of help us get more involved in special teams. It was always this thing that we knew existed. The NFL was trying to do away with it. None of us could really speak intelligibly on it, you know? But if you start getting more man and zone blocking schemes, and he's even saying, you know, you were going to see some really creative, just like on run plays, some trap blocks and all kinds of stuff to spring guys open for touchdowns. So everything starts over, and that's exciting, but it's also scary because the Packers finally invested in special teams, but we invested in those guys, not these guys. So we got to see, man. We gotta start from scratch. Rich has got to figure this thing out and start building out a whole new special teams, at least on kickoffs. But I was even thinking about it. How long before punts change? How long before somebody catches a punt, doesn't call fair catch, gets laid out, and they're like, all right, we got to change that, which I would also be in favor of. Well, again, we'll get into that. But all that to say, I had the exact same thought you had about offensive line. And that was kind of the conclusion I came to as to why the NFL hasn't gotten there and probably won't get there. Because I still think there's a little bit too much space for offensive line. Maybe some super athletic offensive linemen, and maybe only on certain parts, maybe on the interior. Maybe you'll start to see some tackles or something. But it doesn't sound like, at least for now, that's where things are headed. But I am curious to see if at some point it will evolve to that, especially as everybody gets more athletic. You know, tackles are so crazy now. They're basically like massive tight ends. Who knows? We'll see. Anyways, let's get over to Jersey Mike. Hopefully he's doing a little bit better. Hello. Jersey Mike. Let me skip ahead a little bit. Nothing? All right. Let's try this call, which supposedly is Jersey Mike.
Hey, Ryan, it's Jersey Mike.
Hey.
Just calling you back on the road, finally.
Nice.
Well, not finally. I've been on the road for a while today. Got that whole situation sorted out. So good. If any of y'all were giving us some well wishes.
Definitely.
So far, so good. But I'm listening to the podcast, I believe, from this morning. I don't know when. I'm all discombobulated. Listening to the pod and coming to the understanding that I know exactly what the NFL is doing with this whole new kickoff rule and hip drop swivel tackle they're talking about. Okay. I'll give you a direct correlation to this. OSHA. This is OSHA.
Okay.
This is what OSHA does. And let me tell you about it. every single worker who actually likes working, that likes doing their job, busting butt, you know, sweating their balls off, getting dirty, getting cuts and scrapes and bruises, because that's the nature of the job. Every one of us hates OSHA.
Yeah.
I was working for a company that was what you would consider OSHA's grandchild, their best friend, their baby. And let me tell you what about OSHA. They like it. They like the fact that when they show up to work, it takes them 5 hours to get done a job that takes 30 minutes because they have to go through stupid, stupid safety things and hoops and red tape and all that garbage to actually get their job done. So you know what they do for the most time, most of the day? They sit around and do F all because they have to wait for red tape to be cleared. You want to go up top on a roof to go work on the AC? You have to get permission and get a full game plan on how you are supposed to go up on that roof safely so you can work on the AC. Nothing about it is working on the AC. It's going on the roof safely. Number one, I have to get permission from the HSE manager. Number two, the HSE manager then has to get permission of the plant manager, who then has to fill out forms to give to the maintenance worker, who then has to go through all this rigmarole to then go get up on the roof and do the job. Why? Yeah. It doesn't make anything better, and it just costs more money, and everybody hates it. Yeah, it saves maybe a few lives a year and some injuries. But it costs a heck ton of money, and most people don't want to do it or work with it. So you tell me, which one is it? Are we going to allow people to kind of do what they want? Hold on, I'll call back.
Well, I go on a huge tirade about this tomorrow, so I don't want to go too much into it. But we're back to that thing where it's like, if it just saves one injury, if it just saves one life, if it just saves, isn't it worth it? And until you're willing to say no, these things don't stop. And you have entire organizations like OSHA that the problem that I have with a lot of these things, and this comes into the NFL, and I'm going to have a hard time talking about it without just giving away tomorrow. They don't necessarily have a vested interest in the success of your business. They have a vested interest in making sure the numbers of deaths and injuries go down, and that's it. And you know, it's a noble goal, right? They're looking out for you and all that stuff. But even like with the NFL, I proposed a solution, and it was inspired by this whole kickoff thing, which is, if you want to reduce injuries, I applaud that. Great. We can start a committee. My fear of starting a committee is that committee is only going to do whatever it takes to reduce injuries at the complete expense of the NFL, because they're super lazy. They don't care. Just like OSHA, it's not about creative ways of doing things to lessen impact. I couldn't give a crap about the impact of your business, how much time and money and effort. I don't give a crap. I'm just going to impose rules and laws, and if you don't follow my rules, I'm going to fine you, and I'm going to run you out of business. And that's kind of freaking bullcrap. So, like, as far as the NFL, how about this? You want to impose a rule? Fine. You cannot, there cannot be a net negative impact on the game. Now, that's probably not something you can measure, but the fact of the matter is, you have to explain to me how if there is a 10% reduction in injuries, there needs to be a 10% increase. Not really. I mean, just break even is fine, but let's just say, for the sake of sounding cool, a 10% increase in awesomeness. So this kickoff rule, for example, I think this is a great example of being creative as opposed to just saying, ban it, somebody got hurt, ban it, kickoffs are bad, ban it. Hip drop, ban it. I mean, it's just like, how freaking stupid are you? And then you've got this new kickoff rule, which apparently took 2 years to come up with, develop, and implement, because somebody that actually gives a crap about the product wanted to do, at the same time, make the game safer and make it more awesome. We're going to go from sub 40% kick returns to more than 90% kick returns. That's awesome. And so look, almost everybody supports it. And I understand there's a nostalgia aspect, and that sucks, and I'm going to miss it and all that. But they already killed kickoffs, and now we're bringing it back with style. Everything great about it, nothing bad about it. But it just takes a little bit of creative thinking. And so this kickoff thing is a great example of how can we reduce injuries, but also make the game more awesome. And that would be my stand. If you can't do that, don't talk to me. If you're just going to come to me and say, here's a situation where there's injuries, if we just ban it, ban tackling, then those injuries we think will go down. We don't actually know, because the last time we banned hitting, it created the hip drop tackle, which created more injuries. So we banned tackling, which created more injuries, despite us trying to fix that issue. And now we're just going to ban that, hoping that fixes everything. I mean, it's just so stupid. I mean, again, I understand why things like OSHA exist, but I think it's a very bad thing to have a company with so much power that, again, they can shut you down, have zero vested interest in the success of your business. That's not good, because they don't care. And so there might be, if let's say OSHA and your business started to come together and OSHA came to you and they're like, look, man, there's a lot of injuries here and these are preventable. You got guys that are not doing this, that are, you know, what can we do, you know, so that I don't have to destroy, you know, and we can come up with collaborative ways and we can try to figure out some stuff. They don't want to do that because they don't give a crap. And so they simply are like the NFL. They're brain dead morons who have no interest in coming up with creative solutions. It's just ban it, ban it, ban it. Now you need a harness. You need a secondary harness. You need a plan you need to sign out on. You know, you got a lockout tag out, even though there's no electricity, just because I like saying lockout tag out. Go ahead and do that. Sign off on it. And if you don't check every single one of these boxes that I created for you, I'm going to fine you, because my only directive is to make sure there's less injuries. And because I'm a lazy, brain-dead moron, I don't actually care about coming up with creative ways of doing that without hurting you, because I can just very easily make your job and your life harder. Why should I have to expend brain power when I could just make it harder? Well, somebody got hurt. Well, how did they get hurt? Well, they fell off a roof. Well, why did they fall off the roof? Aren't there any supports? Well, yeah, there are, but this guy didn't put them on. Okay, easy solution. There has to be two people on the roof at all times. And they both have to sign off on each other. So if somebody falls off the roof, that person gets, you know, written up or whatever. That I just came up with that off the top of my head. And it cost me nothing, because I'm OSHA and I don't give a crap. I'm just using your thing. But I'm just saying, this is the issue with a lot of this. And this is the problem with the NFL. In general, the only reason they're doing this is because somebody at the XFL actually gave enough of a crap to spend time to make sure that the product is not only not worse, but better. The NFL never would have done this. You know how I know? Because they had the opportunity to fix this as soon as they saw that there were injuries with kickoffs. And instead of coming up with something like this creative, what do? They just banned it. Well, they didn't technically ban it. No, because they had two options. Number one, we could outright ban it. Or number two, we could make it so that it was effectively banned so that the kickoff became something that was more ceremonial. But really, there would be almost no returns. They elected to essentially ban it. And that's what they do with everything. There's an injury. What do? Ban it. And they're hoping that they can just keep taking football away, and that eventually that the game will just be safe enough for everybody to be happy, and then we can just stop taking football away. But you know what? That's never going to happen. We got to freaking stop these people. Because for whatever reason, I understand OSHA doesn't care about some random roofing company or HVAC company because they don't work there. They should, but then, you know, it's a separate thing. It's not my job. It's whatever. The NFL not having a vested interest in the NFL is shocking. The people that run the NFL not having a vested interest in protecting the product is infuriating. Anyways, Jersey Mike, you got me on a thing here, man. I was already fired up talking about it before, and then I said I was going to move off it, and I went on a secondary tirade. And then I finally moved on, and now you got me going on a third one. But let's take our first break. We'll come back, and we got another Jersey Mike who actually got cut off, and we just didn't get to it. But we'll come right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I'm Jane Perlez. longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon slash spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Hey, Ryan, it's Chris Mike again. So, are we going to let people live their lives? I'm not talking about dangerously on the edge, right? Let them understand. Let us actually understand what is causing injuries in the NFL. Let us get a grasp on it and let the players know. Tell them, this is what happens if you do this. This is what happens if you do this. Now, if we got one player who's purposely going out there and horse collaring everybody or whatever the heck, sure, we got a problem. But, you know, like, can we lay off of this crap? Can we turn around and say, hey, you know what? Tackling is difficult. It's really hard. People get hurt. End of story.
Right.
People, like, how many times do we have to go through this? I feel like I've said the same thing every freaking time.
Yep.
I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it. Like you said, throw some flags on them and let's just be done with it. I mean, let's be real, Ryan. With the way that the world is going, we'll be lucky if we have the NFL for another 2, 3, 4 more years. It might end soon. We might be in the midst of World War III with what's going on in Russia and Ukraine and Israel and wherever the heck else we don't know what's going on. At this point, we'll be lucky if the NFL never turns into flag football because of global conflict. But at this point, I think we're going to get flag football if we don't enter some kind of global conflict. That's what we're at. Number one, can somebody just get rid of Roger Goodell?
No.
Or is this all the team owners saying, oh, I don't want to keep playing guys?
Well, I mean, it is. I mean, these owner meetings get together and they vote, and the owners are all in favor of it. No, I'm sure, you know, Goodell is I mean, that's kind of the issue with Goodell is the owners are the ones keeping Goodell in. So even if Goodell leaves, the owners are going to find another Goodell. They're going to find another puppet, another guy that does what they want him to do, which, you know, for a lot of these owners, it's just make me more money. And if the directive is go make me more money, then the concern is the advertisers. The concern is bringing in new viewers. And so the result from our little focus group that we're going to put together or committee is less violence, less injuries, right? The advertisers don't want to see it. The people who are not currently watching football that we want to appeal to, they don't really like the violence or whatever. So this is the direction we go. And, you know, it sounds silly what you're saying as far as we're going to have flag football. And it's like, oh, come on, no, we're not. But, I mean, I just, then answer me this question. When does it end? Because you know that you're not going to take injuries out of the game. You know that I don't care how many different ways you can try to teach tackling. We're either going to flag every single tackle and just pretend that it's not flag football, or we're going to actually just get rid of it. Because the idea that we're going to get rid of concussions, we're going to get rid of injuries, we're going to get rid of this and that, it's impossible. It's 100% impossible. But because nobody has the ability to do what me and Jersey Mike have been doing, I mean, for me, for the last hour and a half, is just screaming at some point when somebody says, isn't it worth it if it saves one knee, if it saves one shoulder, if it saves one concussion? You have to be willing to stand there and say, no, it's not. It's not worth it. No, I would not change the rule if it meant this person not getting a concussion. I wouldn't. And if you can't say that, then you can't have an NFL. And the NFL right now can't say it. They cannot let themselves, they can't allow the NFL to be a violent sport. They just, somebody comes forward and says, you know, this is unacceptable. There's too many injuries. Whatever will we do? And we need the person in Goodell's seat, which I don't think is ever going to happen, to be somebody that's going to sit there and say, what do you mean do? What are you talking about? Guys got hurt, I know. Like, it's not to say we can't try to, again, come up with creative solutions to reduce injuries. But we're not going to just continue to slash this, especially at the expense of the game, because we just don't care. We're just going to keep cutting and cutting and cutting and cutting and not adding anything. And then if we don't cut it out outright, we're just going to throw flags and flags and flags and flags to try to de-incentivize it so that it hopefully kind of makes itself go away. I mean, at some point, we need somebody to just say it's okay to watch football. And again, I don't think that this is an uncommon view. I told this story a few times. I remember I was in shock and haven't really read Bleacher Report since when I saw somebody at Bleacher Report write an article that said something to the effect of, should you feel guilty watching football? And I thought, what the heck kind of a stupid comment is that? And I think it was at the beginning of this sort of injury thing, and was shocked to find out that the answer wasn't no. The answer essentially was yes, that maybe you should. Maybe we should all feel guilty for watching people get injured. And I thought, you frickin' pansy. Go watch basketball. Go watch baseball. I'm sorry. Like, I don't get it. I mean, you understand there are sports out there like MMA, right? And boxing, where they just beat the crap out of each other and give each other concussions. Like, it's not just a consequence of the sport. It's the entire sport. Injuring somebody is the only thing you're trying to do, and it's the only way that you can win the game, is if you injure this person bad enough that they can't get up anymore. But NFL fans and the NFL people in charge and everything else have become so, I don't know how else to put it, but weak and soft, that it's become unpalatable and unacceptable. Well, then go away. Stop trying to change it from within. Go away. And again, here is my thought. If you want to reduce injuries, I think that's great. I don't want to keep injuries high. That's not my intention. That's not what Jersey Mike wants. If we could have zero injuries, that'd be great. I don't want anybody getting hurt. Even if I'm a cold-hearted, selfish piece of crap, which, I mean, I genuinely don't want people getting hurt for their own sake, but even just for the sake of, I don't want to lose players on my, like, I don't want Jordan Love gone for the year. Are you kidding me? I don't want to lose David Bakhtiari or Rashawn Gary or Christian Watson. If I could bring it to zero, you don't think I would? But here's the question. How can you do it without taking away from the game? And if you're saying that you can't, then I'm saying that you just haven't tried hard enough. Come back to me when you have a solution. But again, until the NFL is willing to accept that violence and injuries and things are going to be a part of the game, we are just going to continue to head toward flag football until we either get there or get to the point where we're like, all right, I guess this is just, we're just done. I'm not doing anymore.
Paying guys that are injured. Okay? So let's make it like real life. You go on workers' comp, you get a third of your salary on injury. That's it. I mean, if they're already doing that, cool. Guaranteed contracts can't get paid out while injured. So any money you would have awarded them during normal season, if they're injured, they don't get that guaranteed money. There's got to be something that we can do to make it so that these stupid owners and their stupid paychecks or their wallets or whatever the heck don't have to worry about their money and they can just go out there and enjoy football.
Yeah.
I'm just sick of this. I'm sick of this. Who is responsible for this and how do we take them out? That's what I want to know. How do we take them out? How do we get rid of them? Do we hang them upside down by the pinky toe? Take all the loose change out of their pockets like stupid children? There's got to be something at this point. Feels good to be mad at something that's not me.
Yeah, go back, I get it. Yeah, it feels good to kind of relieve some stress once in a while. That's the only thing I could think is to get them to accept something like that. Like, you have to have a vested interest in preserving the NFL. Like, please tell me you do. As the NFL commissioner, for crying out loud, please tell me you care about the integrity of the game. Okay, now that we've established that, and now that we've also established the NFL decided to get rid of injuries and kickoffs by banning kickoffs because they're lazy morons, and then essentially had to be pushed and pushed and pushed into finding another solution that somebody else had to come up with in a different league that actually cares about innovation and health, by the way, because if you actually want to preserve health, it's not just ban, 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 ban.
because you know what? That doesn't actually fix anything. Like I said, the hip drop thing is a result of banning this targeting. And so we went from one injury to a new injury. You didn't fix anything. So, well, now we'll just ban that, and then we'll just ban that, and we'll ban what's next, and whatever comes next, we'll ban that too. Bro, if you're hitting people, if you're landing on people, they're going to get hurt. I mean, for crying out loud, we banned landing on a quarterback. Well, you can't put your full weight on him. Bro, shut up. Shut up. You're so stupid.
Hey, Ryan, it's Aaron from Eau Claire giving you a call on a Saturday. I have to stop and call back. It's because I'm in the Arby's drive-thru grabbing some curly fries. So anyways, be prepared. But I've been listening to a lot of discussion about the Bears, their incompetent management, and the fact that they don't make good decisions. Mm-hmm. And then in contrast, the fact that the Packers, without an owner, having that as sort of an advantage, I think that's generally the way that the conversation has been going from Packers fans' perspective.
Sure.
Is that basically not having an owner is a good thing, because it allows the Packers to not have to make decisions to please the owner. One second, I'll call right back.
All right. We'll pick that up in part two.
Okay, calling back. I got my Arby's in the car. So the point being that the Packers are more competent than the Bears and more competent than a lot of teams that have owners that pressure the general manager into a quicker and less patient timeline than would be wise. Where... So this brings me to a sort of a parallel opinion, which is, so I've mentioned in the past that I used to live in the Dallas area.
Okay.
And once when I was down there for 5 years, I made a lot of friends from the area that were Cowboys fans. And the thing that always drove me nuts about Cowboys fans is that they always praised Jerry Jones for his business decisions, not really so much as a general manager, but for his business decisions. Like, you know, they would be like, oh, well, Jerry's such a great, you know, he's such a great owner of the, you know, he's not the best general manager, but he's such a great businessman, and he's turned the Cowboys into such a cash cow and all this stuff. And it would drive me nuts, because I'm like, in what universe does that generate respect for him? That's like saying you run a burger business and you make terrible burgers, but you found a way to profit off of it. That's not a really a respectable... Like, if you're in the football business, the product of having a good football team should come before anything else, and it should all be built off of that. So that always used to just drive me absolutely nuts, because in a way, it's almost like Jerry Jones pulling the wool over the fans' eyes, going, you know, and it's like, I don't like the idea of separating the idea of a money-making football franchise from a successful football team. Because to me, the whole point of having a football team is to have a good football product and to win games and to be competitive. And then and only then does it make sense to worry about the profit margins and all that stuff. So it just always used to drive me absolutely nuts how people would make that point. Like, oh, he's a great business manager, even if he's not. It's like, they're the same thing. Here, one second.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Jerry Jones, you're very motivated by profit, no doubt about it. I mean, I would certainly be excited about the fact that I'm a really good businessman if I was Jerry Jones or Jerry Jones's family or some other interested holder in the business.
as a fan, how much do I care about his success in business? Not a ton. You know, the success in business apart from the play on the field doesn't hold much bearing aside from making sure that, you know, the team isn't solvent and you lose the Dallas Cowboys. But the gap between, you know, being a good enough businessman to keep it there and being a good enough businessman that you're making ridiculous amounts of money by hilariously convincing people that they need to buy Dallas Cowboys jerseys. So, I mean, your Cowboys fans are duped into buying a whole bunch of gear and then also duped into praising the owner for being such a shrewd businessman. He is shrewd because he didn't even realize what it is he's good at selling, and that's you, buddy. But, yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, as a fan, it's fair to admire him, I suppose. I mean, if he's a legendary businessman that happens to be the owner of your favorite team, I mean, that's kind of cool. You can, I guess, look up to him in that regard if you want to. But yeah, as a fan, I care about winning. And so if you're not the guy that's going to help us to win, then I, you know, find somebody else, I guess. Let's take a break. We'll come back and hear A.A. Ron's final call here.
So anyways, being a successful football business franchise and being a successful team should go hand in hand, in my opinion. I don't know. Is that something you've heard? Because I've heard that about, I feel like the Cowboys are like the one team in the league that actually spin that narrative. It's so silly to me. I guess I just don't see where the benefit of that comes from. So you have like the crazy Jumbotron in Jerry World.
Not even that crazy
anymore.
That's
like bigger than any other Jumbotron or whatever. And that's something to be proud of as a Cowboys fan. Like, that doesn't mean anything. You know, I'd rather have a crappy stadium but a successful football team. Anyways, I don't know. That's always just driven me nuts a little bit. But I think it goes into the point of this discussion, which is that, as has been said, I think the Packers are they're almost like a non-profit organization, even though they're absolutely not. They're absolutely a for-profit organization, but they almost have the effect of a nonprofit organization, which is they operate as a business, but their main purpose isn't to necessarily just do whatever it takes to make money. Their main purpose is to have a successful enterprise. You know, there's a goal other than money, which is legacy and championships. And a nonprofit operates as a business and does make money. But the thing is, a nonprofit, their main purpose is not to make money. Their main purpose is to achieve something non-monetary and to operate using a monetary structure, if that makes sense. So I feel like the Packers are sort of like that in the sense that, yes, they are a for-profit business, but the fans don't care about how much money the organization makes if the team isn't winning. And I think that's what sets the Packers apart. So anyways, just some random thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, just always remember, people are always going to do what's in their own best self-interest. And if you want to understand the difference between Green Bay and every other franchise, you look at the people that run the Green Bay Packers. What's in their best self-interest is if the Green Bay Packers do well. What's in the best self-interest of an owner? Making money, right? I mean, Mark Murphy doesn't have billions of dollars on the line with these teams. He doesn't have massive profit incentives. He's not getting profit from the Green Bay Packers. He gets a salary. He's an employee.
There is no owner. So there's no profit to be had. You don't make more money from selling jerseys. So you don't have to worry about getting these certain things or drafting a certain player because he's going to sell a bunch of jerseys. It's irrelevant. In fact, it's going to work against you if you draft a bad player that sells a bunch of jerseys, because not only am I not getting profits from the jerseys, but now the team is bad, and now I'm at risk of losing my job. So the only thing in Green Bay that matters is winning. That's how it's set up. And if you want to change that, get an owner in Green Bay. Because suddenly, it's not about winning, it's about the owner making money. And you can pretend that there's direct overlap. There's overlap, but it's not perfect overlap. It's more like one of those, whatchamacallit, two circles that are kind of half overlapping, whatever. Venn diagrams. It's more like that. There's, with winning, generally, will come more profits, and that's great. But as we've learned from a lot of these teams, it's the sweet spot is kind of being like a 9-win team. You get enough people to fill your stadium, good enough for me. And then it just comes down to win now. What can we do to be exciting this year? What can we do to fill the seats this year? So we go in, we push the money out, we go get the big name players, we sell a bunch of jerseys, you know? I mean, if Green Bay had an owner, they'd be all about Xavier McKinney because, hey, we're going to sell a bunch of Xavier McKinney jerseys, or the Jets, right? Woody Johnson, you know how many jerseys, you know how much money that guy probably made from selling Aaron Rodgers jerseys? And so if you just follow the trail of what benefits people, and it's not even like, oh, the evil owners. And bro, take any human being, make them an NFL owner, suddenly their priorities are going to change. And so what makes them the most money? Probably the broadcasting rights and the sponsorships, the advertisers. So their biggest interest is protecting the advertisers. That's where you get all these rule changes from. The second biggest, merchandising, selling jerseys. So what do? You go out and get all these big name guys and everything. Doesn't really necessarily matter if we're a great team. We need to be a good enough team to keep the fans coming back, and we got to sell a bunch of jerseys. Number three, ticket sales. Keep butts in seats. If I can do that with 9 wins, the difference between 9 and 15, not that huge of a difference. Of course I'd like to win a Super Bowl. Of course I'd like to sell more tickets. Of course I'd like to get a little bit extra revenue from the postseason, especially if I could sell tickets locally. You know, if we have home games in the postseason, if we're that good, that's even better. But if it's about profit, it's absolutely not the case that, you know, winning is going to make you more money. Marginally, maybe. But you're more concerned about the losses. In other words, would an owner be willing to go down to a 4-win team if it means they have a better chance of being a 13-win team next year? Or would they rather be a 9-win team 2 years in a row? It's not even close. They cannot stomach, you know, because they also have a lot of expenses, and I'm sure, well, whatever, we'll leave that alone. But you don't want to not have people in the seats. You don't want to have advertisers go, meh, can't have that. We can't have the negatives. The bonus of being a playoff team, great. But that is, it's just that, it's a bonus. So the idea that the Packers having an owner would be a good thing is nonsense. It's really just impatient fans who want something, they didn't get it, and they just want somebody that's in the owner's seat that's going to throw as big of a temper tantrum as they're throwing because they didn't get what they want. There's no actual rational reason anybody would want the Green Bay Packers to have an owner. It's insane that anybody would actually genuinely believe that.
Hey, Ryan, it's Jersey Mike. Hey. So, listening to Clayton's podcast about, you know, linebackers that just have to be defense. I don't know if you realize, but I'm kind of stuck on linebackers. Mm-hmm. I think we addressed that it's the biggest need in the draft. And I'm still believing that we need to take Peyton Wilson with our first-round pick. Y'all might disagree, but I think him and Quay next to each other is just electric. Quay and Mike, and with Wilson playing, either side, they can do everything, including rush and passing, which is what I like. And let's talk about 4-3 Bear, where you bring your outside linebackers up to the line of scrimmage. Wilson is that kind of guy. That's also that Viper linebacker that they're talking about in college. That's that whole position. Again, Viper. Not a lot of people have heard of it, but it's essentially guys who are like, you know, 6'2 to 6'4, 215 to 240, and they're fast, and they can pass rush. And I think that's why some guys have, talked about Top Robinson moving him out there, because, hey, if he can cover, you know, look out that Michael Parsons role kind of deal. I don't like that idea. I love Trent Robinson. I really like some of these edge rushers, but I just don't think that we need that high-end talent. And obviously, Boots going to tell us, like, hey, are we going kind of like need draft, where we're drafting for need, but also drafting the highest or the best available in our needs? Or we're going to we're going to feel the board out. I know Goose is going to do the right thing. I trust that man with Packers' lives right now. But Clayton mentioned Jeremiah Carter Jr. I haven't listened to a lot of Clayton's podcasts just because I like listening to you. But my biggest thing is Jeremiah Trotter. I've gone back to watch his tape, and, like, honestly, I don't really see a lot of knocks on his game at all, whatsoever. Some of the athleticism isn't there, but that don't matter with him. As you talked about before with safeties, some of those slower guys, it doesn't matter. They can definitely use their brains and get work done. And I think that's what Jeremiah Trotter is. Jeremiah Trotter is a very, very smart dude. And he's just that guy. I think he is. I really think he is. I'm getting excited for the draft. Got about a month. It's going to be a wild one. I'm liking that we signed Eric Wilson back. Good depth. Man, I'm getting antsy. What's your favorite part about this season? Go Pack, go.
Yeah, I think my favorite part is kind of doing what you're doing right now, which is really just trying to understand things on a fundamental level. I mean, we do that all year, but for different things. We're trying to understand the football team that we have and how that translates to winning, how that translates to the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. You get here and we're trying to understand our football team on a fundamental level when it comes to draft and develop. And it's fun to really dig in and look at it and say, okay, what do we have and what do we need? And then also looking at, I think probably the most exciting thing is, what could we be if we add this guy? Like, give me the sales pitch. Let's say we get like Quay and this dude, and we have two like premier linebackers in this defense. What does that look like? Or conversely, you know, just take that one elite piece and move it somewhere else. What if the elite piece is at corner and we got two really solid corner? Like, what does that do? What if we get another safety or an edge to put opposite Rashawn or something? Just kind of move that piece around and see what it does. And then you can get more granular. Like, you know, what if, you know, a Mike compared to a Will compared to a Sam, you know, a boundary compared to the slot, or, you know, free compared to strong, you know, same thing with offense, obviously. Really just imagining, you know, because sometimes for me anyways, I get stuck in like guard and, you know, whatever. And it's like, okay, but let's just think for a second. This offense with a premier offensive line, and compare that to this offense with kind of a bad offensive line. Are we still going to like snicker and sneer at the title of guard or center or whatever? Like, I don't know, dude. As far as Jeremiah Trotter, yeah, I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, at one point there were the two Clemson linebackers that were going to be, you know, elite linebackers. They were both going first round. I think one of them went back to school and one of them is now maybe a second round pick, probably more close to third round. If the other one didn't go back to school, you have to forgive me. I just haven't heard his name in forever, but I think he did. But yeah, I mean, I think the other thing that I'm starting to do is really try to figure out what are we actually looking for and then going and finding it. So I was glad when we got Xavier McKinney, because now we can really hone in on what we need. What's the remaining need at safety? And then just go find him, right? Cam Kitchens is just couldn't be further from my thought process at this point. It has nothing to do with RAS. He is not the kind of guy. I mean, even as a free safety, I don't think he's the right guy. I mean, he's got speed, but, you know, we're looking for guys that are kind of downhill, really solid tacklers. He was never that. But now that we're looking for a strong safety to complement Xavier McKinney, there is less than 0% that I think we're getting Cam Kitchens. It makes no sense whatsoever. So just kind of narrowing that down, kind of like what I did with running back, right? When we got Josh Jacobs and I kind of had that thought of, you know, I think that this has more to do with preferences and maybe, you know, try to find more Josh Jacobs as opposed to a compliment. That doesn't mean I'm right. I could be wrong, in which case you want to find that Aaron Jones, go for it. I'm not. Now,
they might prefer a Josh Jacobs and still get an Aaron Jones because they're a good football player. But I just, that's kind of where I'm at right now, is trying to really hone in on what is Gutekunst looking at, or better yet, when he talks to Matt LaFleur and Jeff Hafley, what are they telling him when he comes in there and says, like, what are we trying to do and what can't we do? And you know, what do we need to make your scheme, your system, whatever work? What's the answer? That's what I want to know. And then go find that guy. Anyways, I'm going to leave it at that. You guys have a good rest of your day, your night, whatever. Have a good one. Bye-bye.